Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. Welcome to episode 10. We're 10 weeks in and we've got a special guest today. We always have special guests, but I'm excited to have two of you in at the same time. And thanks for coming in on the same day. I don't know if you guys are sick of stealing each other's thunder or whatever. we have Nick and Alex Halloran, two local players, Utah-born players who played Division I. And we're gonna go on a tour with them and explore all the ways. We were just talking about it. People want to know what you did growing up and how you made it out of Utah. So first off, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Jay.
Yeah, we're excited about it.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to have you. And, you know, I'm not a journalist, but I saw an article on Facebook one time, and I perused through it, and it said stuff about being a journalist, and I'm supposed to offer disclosure any time that I have a personal relationship with those that I'm interviewing. But in the hockey world, it seems like in Utah, you're going to know everybody that you interview anyway. So yeah. Full disclosure, Nick, I've coached you when you were a little guy. Alex, you worked my camp for forever.
Yep.
So we've got that out of the way now. Alex, let's start with you. How old are you now?
28 years old now.
28 years old.
Yeah.
That makes me so old. Let's talk about growing up with you. You guys, how old were you guys when you got the rink in your yard?
Rink in the yard was 11 or 12, I think.
Yeah.
So 2002-ish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, though. That was cool.
It was great. We'd always have, you know, hundreds of kids over at a time.
Yeah.
A rink with a capacity for maybe five, but
yeah, that's where it all started, though. You know,
yeah,
that's where you start to love it.
Yeah, and so, Alex, how old were you when you started playing?
I was 8 years old when I started playing. So, I was thinking about this morning because I had a feeling I'd be asked this question, and I was at Challenger Elementary School, and I don't know if anyone out there knows the name Nate Hoffelmeyer, but he's actually the one that got me started in hockey. So, thanks, Nate.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's always good to throw some love to whoever started you in hockey. Yep. And you're 8 years old, you start playing hockey. So it wasn't in your family before this?
Never, no. So my whole family had played football, baseball, basketball, okay. The traditional sports, yeah.
All right. So you start playing hockey, and like, what's your first team? You start off with rec?
Yeah, House League, I think was what it was called. I'm not sure if
right,
it's still
House
what
League.
It is. Yeah, and first practice was up at Bountiful, or it was, gosh, might. So they bring everyone up and skate you around, and then they kind of sort you by like A, B, C, and D, I think, and then they break you up into teams. So I don't even remember the name of my first team, but I know Mike Higgs coached it.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
Nice. Very nice. What about your first travel team? When did you start realizing that you were going to be good and start playing travel?
It was after the first year I was asked to play for the Grizzlies. Yeah, the Grizzlies. And just, you know, had no idea what I was going to end up doing or what to expect, and ended up playing for the Grizzlies and kind of ran with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, Nick, as you're growing up, your older brother's now playing hockey, and now you follow his footsteps?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if Nate never would have told Alex to start playing, I wouldn't be here. But, yeah, I mean, it just kind of followed suit. Like, I did all the sports and stuff, but I think just watching Alex do it, I idolize him a lot. You know, he's a great older brother, and I kind of wanted to do what he was doing. So
okay,
I just
cool.
picked it up.
Okay, so this is just such a cool story. And Alex, obviously, at some point you realize you have an opportunity to play college hockey. I don't want to skip. Where did you play? So you started playing for the Utah Junior Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, do you have to leave the house?
Yeah. So I left the house. I went to – first time leaving was Shattuck St. Mary's. I did that for a year. It was a good experience. I was on pretty much the best team in the world, I think, at the time for Bantams.
Who was on that team? Are there names we'd know?
There are names, a lot of names. You know, there out of that team, there's only two people that are playing in the NHL or that have played in the NHL. But like David Tays, or yeah, is that his name? David Tays.
John.
What's the older one?
Jonathan.
John. Yeah, his younger brother David was on the team. Kevin Connaughton, who plays for the Stars right now, I think, or maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, there are a lot of players. Probably none that you'd know though, or that most people would know.
So typically that Bantam team or the prep team goes like 50 wins and one loss over the year.
We had two losses, and one was in the national championship game in triple over or double overtime.
On a dump?
Crazy. On a dump. Guy dumped it.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
That's the kind of game I would lose, yeah.
But that was the first time I left. I was 13, and then I came back after that year and did 4 years of high school here and then ended up leaving again.
So you played at which high school?
Juan Diego.
Juan Diego. Okay. And then obviously you're not just playing at Juan Diego while you're here.
No, I was also playing at the time they were the Regulators under Ricard.
Rumors are that Ricard's going to be possibly an NHL coach here pretty soon.
That's what I'm hearing. Wouldn't surprise me. He's an unbelievable coach.
Yeah, fantastic coach.
Yeah.
That organization has really grown. And I just want to throw this in here too. I'll pump my own tire and Phil Snyder's tire and Matt Green and Levi Clegg and all this other Shattuck.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
I only did 3/4 of a year there. But when we were there, we were paving the way for you guys to be good because Shattuck wasn't that good back then. I mean, it was fun. It was a good prep school, but we weren't going 50-1 on the year.
You guys were laying the foundation for future teams.
We were doing all the hard work, taking all the lumps.
Absolutely, yeah. Then the young guys just come in.
Yeah, exactly. Take all the glory. Yeah. All right, so you come back to Utah, and for me, and tell me if this is the same for you, just in the time that I was at Shattuck, I went from Murray High to Shattuck St. Mary's for most of a season. Where at Murray High we practiced on Monday nights.
Yeah, like 11:30 p.m.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Sometimes we got the ice on Friday nights and they had to miss all of our dances or whatever. But we had one practice a week and one game a week. And then all of a sudden you go to a team like that or an organization like that where you have a ton of ice time. You're skating every day. And then you come back to Utah and you've grown 10 seasons in the course of a year, right? Because you've got so much more ice time than everybody else here. Yeah. Is that what you felt? You came back. You had to have been a standout player to go from here to Shattuck. But when you come back, are you...
Yeah, so I, you know, Levi was the one who said, hey, you know, you're pretty good. You might want to start looking elsewhere to go play. And so he obviously threw that out. You know, he went there. So I went to Shattuck. I made their best team and... While I was a standout everywhere else, you know, I was a big fish in a little pond. I was kind of the average player on the team. But I did grow. Like you said, you know, you can have ice time whenever you want. You can go skate at 3 a.m. if, you know, the inclination strikes you. So I came back and I'd grown a lot. And I think my game had developed a lot further than I expected it and further than anybody was really at my age in Utah. So when I came back, I felt like I had a pretty significant advantage for a couple of years.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Okay, so now you've played, and you're finishing up high school here. What's your next choice? Juniors?
Juniors, yeah. I was just deciding where to play juniors. Ended up going to British Columbia. So.
And what team were you with there?
I was with the Cowichan Valley Capitals for 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. And for some reason, I thought you played Salmon Arm.
No. Well, I would have loved to play at St. Lauren. Cowichan was a good spot. Good fans.
Well, it worked for you, right?
Yeah, it worked.
And now this is the part that I think is so cool. How many universities were you talking to at that time?
Talking over the course of 2 years, I don't know. You probably touch on 20 of them, 30 of them, a lot. But the ones that, you know, opportunities actually pan out for you, probably 5 to 10.
Okay. And now... You still have to, in the back of your mind, have a hope that you're going to go play in the NHL or play pro at some level.
That's, yeah. You know, that's everyone's dream.
Right.
And I think the older you get, the more you start to realize or, you know, figure out how close you actually are to, you know, attaining that.
Okay.
That was always my goal, but there was a goal that I had placed, you know, higher importance on, and that was just getting a good education first, so...
And then you go to one of the top colleges in the country.
Yeah, which was, so it ended up working out both ways, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
But, and for those people who don't understand, and Alex goes and plays, you pick Air Force, you pick the Air Force Academy. And
yeah.
And with humble brag, yeah. No, but with that comes the end of the NHL dream, right? Because after two years, so you play there, and you have the opportunity to walk away at 2 years, correct?
So after your second year, you can bounce if you want with zero obligation to pay anything back and or serve. Yeah.
Right. And then if you commit after that part, then the NHL dream or any professional hockey dream's got to be done, because for those that don't know, if you commit after the second year, you sign your name on that paper. They have a big day on the beginning of your third year, and you commit and you say, I'm going to serve, and I don't know what it was then, but I think it's always been the same. 5 years?
Five.
Plus three reserve.
Two reserve.
All right. It's three reserve now for the Army.
Is it?
I don't know if all academies have the same, but that's a huge commitment. And that's obviously the only way you get out of that is if the president writes you a letter and says, hey, I think Alex should play in the NHL if he's going to get drafted.
Yeah. He didn't do that, unfortunately. But they actually, this is interesting, they just changed that rule. So if you have the opportunity to go play professional in any sport or go to the Olympics. Well, the Olympics, they've always kind of catered to. They have a special program where you don't have to serve. You can just go train and then perform in the Olympics. But I think it was a year or 2 years ago, they just changed up how they did it. And if you have an opportunity, they let you go.
Really?
So that's exciting.
The Army just had a guy last year that was supposed to go in the first round of the NFL draft, but they said he had to have a waiver from the president. He said he wouldn't take it anyway because he was so...
Really?
Hoorah.
That's interesting.
He was ready to go straight to serve.
Interesting.
Wow.
Well, so sure I don't know.
His perspective changed slightly.
I'd rather. I mean, if you had the opportunity to make millions of dollars, seems like you could hit that part of your career, you know, later. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Go back and serve and put a few million in the bank. But I don't know. But anyway, so tell us about playing at Air Force. What was that like? And you know, you obviously you're playing NCAA Division I athletes. And you're on a good team. You have a really good schedule.
Yeah. So my freshman year, I walked in, and our team was – we had an awesome team. We made it to the national tournament that year, lost to BC 2-1. They ended up winning. Air Force was difficult. It was a grind. I mean, you're up. I can't even – we have 40 minutes on this podcast. I'd need about 3 weeks to – touch on everything, but yeah. It's a grueling schedule, as you know. Yeah. Your daughter's going through it, so you know, you wake up, do military stuff, you go to class all day, and then you go down, and then you have a workout, and then you skate for 2 hours, and then you got to go back up and crush all the homework that you're given during the day. So it's a long grind.
The game's got to be a good release, though.
Yes, but you do. You know, you put some perspective in your life and you start to appreciate the things that you kind of took for granted. So it had its positives and its negatives.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And listening, like, we always had a lot of respect for what you went through, and I especially did. And hearing that you'd picked Air Force Academy was, you know, I spent many hours in the stands with your father and when you were going through those choices, and he was just so proud. Of, you know, the fact that, one, that you could get into a school like that. It's not easy. And
took the ACT 6-7 times, I think. So, for all you kids out there, you can do it. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That was 5 times. Yeah.
Literally, the Army told my daughter, they're like, this is what you have to get on the ACT. So she went and took the ACT, got that score. She's like, okay, I'm done.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So, that's, some people are privileged like that. Good for her.
That's just, you know, I think that's a lot of those people in those academies. They have to be that way. They have to, you know, obviously have to be cut above as far as being smart. So now you've played, and now you're in the Air Force. What do you do now?
Oh, well, I'm actually out of the Air Force now, fortunately. So I'm back here as of... you know, a couple months ago. But that was a big transition. I was stationed in LA doing program management for the Air Force Satellite Network. They put me in a division called the STAO, which is the Space Training Acquisition Office. Sorry, a lot of acronyms thrown your way. But basically, they build the video game trainer that all the space operators train on before they fly the satellites around. Because you can't just put someone on a computer and be like, all right, have fun with this thing. It's, you know, $10 billion. Don't mess it up.
So you were Space Force before Trump made Space Force?
I was the original Space Force. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I know.
All right. Well, that's just so amazing. It was fun to watch. And by the way, I think those are the best jerseys. And like Air Force
has some
of the uniforms you guys throw out are just amazing.
Yeah.
All right, Nick, let's talk about you. So you grow up, you watch Alex play and you jump in. And did you start with the Junior Grizzlies as well?
No, I did not. I started with House as well, and then I think I jumped over to the Renegades or the Regulators or whatever it was at the time, and I just kind of played AA hockey until I kind of had the same talk with my parents that maybe I should start to look elsewhere, and so then the possibility of going to Colorado arised, and I went and tried out, and I made the team, and then I started playing over there.
So what team were you with?
Over there in Colorado.
Yeah.
So I started out with the U15 Thunderbirds.
Okay.
And then the next year I got cut from the U16 Thunderbirds. And it was like my world had just crashed and it ended. And it was actually probably one of the best things that ever could have happened to me because it kind of just made me battle some adversity. And so I decided to go and play for the Colorado Rampage, which is just in the Springs instead of Denver. Had a great year with them, and then I stuck with them one more year to play U18s, and I really appreciated my time down there. They did a great job, and then I went up to the BC, kind of just following the same footsteps.
It was
just easier for me. Yeah, it really was.
So you end up in Colorado Springs. BC, what team?
Trail Smoke Eaters. Trail, yeah. I think they had like 5,000 people in the town.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Those are some of the best towns to play in, though.
Yeah, no, they love their hockey there, but boy, there was nothing to do. So.
Yeah. All right. So you play for Trail, and now how many universities are you talking to?
I was ironically committed to the Air Force Academy as well. And I think part of that was just, I thank Frank for everything he's done for me, and, you know, they're a great organization and school there, but that lifestyle just wasn't really for me, so.
People don't understand. You give up your life.
Yeah, you really do. It's all day, every day. They basically control what you're doing. And, it's a great career afterwards, but it's a tough lifestyle to live. And
yeah.
I wasn't ready for that. And I think I committed young, just like kind of thinking, I just want to play Division I hockey. Like, I don't know if I'm going to get another offer.
Yeah,
like,
I need to get there as soon as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, every route's different. And I chose to take a different one, so I decommitted, and I don't think as many schools as you, but I think I talked to like 6-7 schools, and then one or two of them actually panned out.
Okay.
So I was talking to like Brown, Colorado College, Cornell, and CC just kind of seemed like the best fit.
So you're no dummy. Like you're looking at big schools too.
I'm smart, but grades are fairly average as long as you just, you know, 3.5 and above. I think you can.
Yeah, that's not average.
Squirm your way onto any school. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and that's amazing. I did not know that you were looking at some of the Ivy League schools.
Yeah.
Again,
you went on a visit, I think, to a couple of them, right?
I went on a visit to Brown, and they were just kind of snooty towards me, so I didn't really like it.
And Anaya's there. You guys are the same age, right?
Yeah,
you guys played on the same
teams. Anaya says he loves it there, and I could see how he would. It's like an incredible school. The facilities are awesome, but I just wasn't getting the right vibe from him, so I went a different direction.
Well, that's fair. I mean, I don't know. It's funny because I don't know what goes into deciding when you're 17, 18 years old. How do you pick where you're going to play, you know, because this is it. Either they have your major. A lot of athletes don't think about, what am I going to major in? They think, how good is the team going to be?
Yeah.
But you got to have that chemistry too, right? You got to have that. There's got to be some kind of an emotional connect with the university.
Definitely. I think a lot of things play into it, like reputation, kind of what your parents think, what everyone's kind of telling you. You take all this information in and try to spit out the best answer.
All right. So now you're freshman year at – what year are you now?
I'm a junior.
You're a junior.
This season.
So your freshman year comes. You had a decent freshman year.
Yeah, I think I had like 9 points. It was a whirlwind. It was ridiculous. The conference that I'm in, it's every weekend you're playing a top 10 team. And
yeah.
So I just remember my head spinning off in the D zone every game. And
Was that because of the concussion or?
No, it was just the other teams are just so, it's such an adjustment towards college, and they're so fast, and you just got to make decisions so much quicker, and it was fun, but it was tough. Like,
okay,
we only won like 6-7 games that year.
So did you make a huge commitment to yourself over that off season between your freshman and sophomore year to just work harder? We hear that from a lot of guys that come back. Like, Daniel talks about how he made the commitment to himself to lose weight and be stronger. And
yeah, that's interesting. I think I've always been a pretty consistent, like, hard worker off the ice. I don't think much changed besides me playing more hockey, which is interesting. Like, I played way more hockey than I did in the past summers, last summer, and I honestly think I just got better at hockey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just had more confidence going into the second season also, and just kind of panned out for me.
So it's more time on ice versus off ice.
Yeah, for sure.
That's interesting, because a lot of people just want to take a complete break. Like, I know tons of the pros are like, I'm taking a couple weeks completely off, and then I'm going to slowly start building back into the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you, I mean, you jump right back into it. You help me with my camps. You're on the ice all the time with those kids. And but then your sophomore year, you're like, when did you find out that you were nominated for the Hobie?
I'm not sure. I think around, like, January. It was, like, around now, January-ish, I had a couple pretty big weekends, and confidence was flowing. My line was clicking, and we just couldn't stop scoring. So,
that's a good problem to have.
You got to nominate this kid.
Yeah, no. So it went pretty well. And, the bounces were going our way. Like, the team bounces were going our way. We were getting wins when we probably shouldn't have, and I think that had a lot to do with my personal confidence.
All right. So how well did the team do that year? How far did you guys go?
We were like, I think we were like 500, but we beat Denver first game of playoffs, and then it was 2-1 going into the third period of the second game, and it's a 3-game series. And in my opinion, there was a kick goal.
Okay.
Like, most blatant kick I've ever seen, and that doesn't go in. Maybe it goes a little differently, but they end up winning that game 3-2, and then they beat us the next night. So that's as far as we
went. Video review in college that year?
There was plenty of video review, but right. I think it was a little home field advantage.
All right. Not bitter, though?
yeah, I mean, can't do anything about it now.
Oh, so. We can't blame you. It was so cool to be in Utah, and the way I found out about it is I get an email, and it says, hey, Daniel Brickley's been nominated for the Hobie Baker. And I'm like, for those of people that don't know, the Hobie Baker is like the Heisman Trophy for hockey players. So saying that you are the best player in college hockey that year. So I get an email about Daniel, and I'm scrolling through it, and there's a picture of
Nick's
you. And I'm
like,
I'm like,
how'd he sneak in there?
I'm like, whoa, there's two Utah players. That's unheard of.
Yeah,
that is unheard of.
I mean, and first off, to have two brothers that played Division I college hockey is the Connor Walchucks are the only Utah brothers that Steve didn't play Division I, but because he went to the Dub, and then but Brian played at Denver and was a high draft pick, but decided to be an eye surgeon or something. I can't remember exactly what he did, but he picked to not go to the NHL and to make money over a lot of years instead of just a couple of years. Good for him.
Yep. Yep.
But to have you guys come out, like to have two guys out of Utah nominated for the Hobie the first year, did you know right away that Daniel was one of the other nominees?
I didn't even know I was nominated until he Snapchatted me and said, hey man, congrats. I'm like, on what? And so that's kind of how I found out. I wasn't surprised that he was nominated. He's a stud, and he was really good for him last year. And
good year for him, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was cool. It was a special experience. Like, me and him are good buddies. So for me to see him have that success, it was really cool. I'm super happy for him. And I think it goes both ways. Like, we were both, like, it was cool to see someone from Utah doing big things.
Yeah, and that's for the rest of us in Utah, it was just – we were so proud of you guys, and it was such an honor to see Utah kids doing well. And then, of course, I'm going to just say, oh, yeah, I coached him when he was little.
Yeah.
I'm probably the reason.
Knows, yeah.
No, but, I mean, it was amazing to see. And then one of my follow-up questions to that is, we were talking about this before we went on the air, is that for a lot of the other guests that we've had on the show, Daniel included, Daniel talks about how he was out of shape, he was pudgy, he – you know, probably didn't have the best work ethic. We're going to talk to Garrett Metcalf, too. Same thing, Garrett. You know, he battled weight issues, and he had a lot. Like, even at my own camp, which just this upset me. I didn't know about it for a couple years, but one of my goalie coaches told Garrett, like, just quit, dude. Hockey's not for you. Either start work. It was Jordan Parisi.
That's right.
Jordan Parisi.
Playing Division One.
Yeah. Jordan Parisi says.
You got to hang on.
He says either. I think he threw the gauntlet down. He's like, either start working or just quit. Because you're not working. Sometimes. And you're wasting your dad's money.
It's a good wake-up call, I guess.
And maybe that was That's it. Maybe life. That. And so what I'm getting at is that we had these players. Most of our players that are good now were not good then.
Yeah.
But then there's you two that were the tops of your age groups. And there are other kids that were, you know, talked about, but I know you're 97.
Yeah.
So in that 97 birth year, there was basically you and maybe Anaya.
Mhm. Anaya's a 98 actually.
Oh yeah, he's Tegan's age. So in the 97s, I remember when you guys were playing and you were when we were with West Coast, whatever they're called at the time, Chatters, Regulated. Mm-hmm. We went through all the names.
Yeah.
When we went back to Nationals, you guys were the names that were on the score sheet. So you guys were the names that people were looking for. And Alex, it was same with you as you were growing up. Did you ever feel pressure? Like, if I don't make it out of here, then I'm a flop. Did you ever feel that?
No, not necessarily. I think there's pressure if you do go out of state to do something. You know what I mean? But I think the worst thing you could have done is never leave and never try, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, I heard a quote, I can't remember where it was, but it's like, people are afraid of the dark, but a man who's afraid of the light is way worse. And so I think, like, not even trying is kind of one thing. I never felt pressure to be a flop, but I think it's important, if you're having fun with hockey and you love it, to just keep playing, you know? And I think that's, as far as I've seen, the people that are successful now, like Garrett and Brickley, it's never necessarily the best players at 12, 13. It's the players who love hockey the most and want to get better every day. And that's generally, they just pan out.
That's super advice. It's it's funny because one of the coaches that I always leaned back on for advice was J.P. Parisi. And there was a time when I wasn't sure what to do with Tegan, because they wanted him at Shattuck St. Mary's at 13, 14 years old. Mm-hmm. And I asked JP, I'm like, what should I do? Should I have him, should I figure out a way to pay the 20, 30 grand a year to get him into Shattuck now? And JP's advice, and this is a guy that's put tons of guys into the NHL.
Probably more than anyone else.
Yeah, I would say he probably has, but more than anybody else.
Yeah.
And he just said, look, it doesn't matter if your son just plays on the pond and doesn't play any kind of organization. As long as he's loving going to the rink every day, it doesn't matter if it's at Shattuck or if it's, you know, at the pond in your backyard or whatever, he'll develop and those opportunities will come. And I was like, that goes against everything else you're hearing, but it makes sense too, right? You got to have passion for the game. And at some point, like with Garrett, it had to have clicked in.
Yeah.
Right, because we couldn't motivate him. I mean, maybe Jordan motivated him by being a dick, but I mean, he shouldn't have. I don't think he should have said that to a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
But whatever, something worked, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's huge advice. Just keep playing, keep having fun.
Yeah, definitely just ignore all the politics of he plays here. We were talking about this on the drive here. Just like, it really doesn't matter where you play, as long as you can play, you'll keep moving up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have kids come from, you know, you guys are in the BC or wherever you're at, you still end up NCAA Division One. We had a kid from the Ogden Mustangs go Division One last year.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you're good enough, they'll find you. Exactly. Obviously, some of it is being in the right place at the right time and having a little bit of luck, but if you work hard,
you'll make it.
Yeah, you'll get there. You'll get where you want to be.
No pressure. I just know there's a lot of crazy hockey parents that are like, oh, my kid's got to go do this and spend money and do all this, and it's just not necessary, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's super expensive.
Yeah,
and it's easy to get caught in that trap. It's, as a parent, you feel like you're in a race.
Also, if your kid doesn't even want to be playing and you're forcing it, you're just wasting money.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I've tried to tell parents that in the past. I've seen kids come through my goalie camp, and we charge $700 for a week for goalie camp. And we're still one of the least expensive goalie camps around that's that inclusive. And I see parents all the time sign their kids up and just...
Yeah, yelling at them from the stands.
Yeah, exactly.
And
pick
it up.
I think you know we made that rule a couple years... I don't know if you were on the ice, but we had parents leaning over during... They're
just
leaning over the glass
of our mom.
During...
That's funny.
Well, it definitely wasn't because of your mom.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I loved about sitting in the stands with your dad, though, is he just... Like, we sat in our corner and tried not to yell or say anything, and your dad would just come over and, like... 20% of our conversation was hockey, and then 80% was just whatever else.
Yeah,
and we just sat there and watched hockey and tried not to yell at our kids or the refs or the other coaches or whatever.
Yeah, I feel like they actually did a really good job with us of just letting us play. And, you know, if this is something you want to do, then do it.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
So I always like to say two of the questions I like to ask, and I'm going to ask both. Is one, you've mentioned one player, but who, besides family members, helped you the most? Who made that, you know, that sacrifice for you that stood out as, I can go to this person to help me get to where I want to go?
Purely from a hockey standpoint, are you asking that question? Because
or life. I mean, either way. Here's your chance to throw
I want to say parents, but that's such a cliche answer. I'm going to switch it up. Just
Well, that's what I'm saying. It can't be family member. It can't be your parents.
Oh, can't be family member. Okay.
Like, is there a coach that was super helpful for you guys?
It's either Ricard Gromberg or Lyle Bradley.
Oh.
Living legend.
Yeah.
So.
For me, it was one of my coaches at the Rampage, Andrew Sherman. Like, after I got cut from the Thunderbirds, he really took me in and said, like, this isn't, you know, like, it's not a big deal. Just keep working.
And yeah.
Kind of allowed me to realize that I could have a future in it. And, after getting cut from a team that you think you're going to make, it's kind of a big deal that you got someone there with you.
Right.
So.
Were there any – so weren't there other Utah players on the Thunderbirds when you were there? Or was that on the Rampage? Or were there no other Utah players?
I don't think there were any other Utah players.
Okay.
Was it Trescott on
– Trescott was on the Rampage, but the year after I went
– We've got – he just got in town too. We got to have him on too.
Yeah, he's a stud.
Yeah, we got to listen to his story. Okay, and then the second question I like to ask is, okay, looking back, and you've kind of already done it, but what would you tell a 13-year-old Nick Halloran or Alex Halloran? What would you say now as advice? Looking, you're older, you're wiser. What do you want to tell the Utah kids now?
Hit the net.
Hit the net.
No, just keep working. Have fun with it, honestly.
I think that's the huge part is have fun with it. For me, it's always been that way.
Yeah, you can't lose the perspective of why you started. Otherwise, you know, when it becomes a job and you're dreading going every day, you're just not going to perform well. So that's a good one. You know, always keep that in sight, have fun. But biggest thing is, you know, write your goals out and define what you want to do. And then that's step one. That's a plan. Work towards it. You'll get there.
Yeah.
And you don't need to leave. I don't know what the landscape of Utah hockey is right now, but... Yeah, 10 years ago, you could still play AAA here, travel, and still make it places. So don't feel like you have to go to, you know, another state to stand out or develop.
When I put this out, we got the idea that we were going to have a podcast, and I put on Facebook, I'm like, hey, what would be the good name? What's a good name for a Utah hockey podcast? And one of the former West Coast coaches said, call it the Road to Colorado. Because a lot of our best players have ended up in Colorado, right?
Yeah,
but funny. I think now that the times have changed and we've kind of had a reset. It seems like every 10 years somebody comes in and resets it, comes up with a defined plan of this is how we're going to make the kids better. And I think, you know, I don't have a horse in this race, but West Coast seems to be doing that now. They've put money in it. They've pulled all the bull crap out of it, and they're keeping Utah players strong.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. So it seems like now that we have a path to actually stay.
Yeah, that's like kind of the step one, write your goals out. And like, I think if you can get the best players in Utah to stay in Utah and then maybe start recruiting into Utah, I think that's a big step because generally some of the best players of Utah will travel out like I did at the time.
Yeah.
And I think when you're losing the best players, you're consistently losing to other teams.
Well, so. And think about how good you guys would have been that 97-98 team with, you know, the talent that you guys had.
Yeah.
And then everybody left the next year. Like, we had a deep run into nationals at the Tier 2 level.
Yeah.
And imagine if those guys would have stayed here and developed. And we've said this for years and years and years. If we could have just kept those players and developed them here, our Tier 2 team could have been a Tier 1 team and could have been competitive.
Oh,
because those kids went and were huge contributors to those Tier 1 teams elsewhere.
Definitely. It only takes like 4 or 5 kids to really change a team.
Yeah, you know? And you have 4 or 5 Tier 1 level kids, and then they can bring everybody else up.
Exactly. And then it just kind of gets the wrap up for Utah from there.
So hopefully that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, let's hope.
So, Alex, you're done. You've done the military.
Yeah, I'm done. And I also haven't been on skates in 5 years. So.
Well, it's time.
Isn't that crazy?
It's time. Isn't it time?
We were just talking about it the other day. Yep.
So what's the deal with that?
Well, my career, unfortunately, was plagued with injuries. And another thing I would tell those 13-year-olds out there is stretch. Stretch every day because I had so many injuries. Tore my MCL, my PCL, my LCL in both legs. Like, I was just a huge bandage. So,
stretch. Are you ready to start skating now?
I need double knee replacement, but then I'll be ready. Yeah.
Well, they make fancy braces now.
I know. I have two. They're just, they really just are cumbersome and limit your movement. But
I blew my left MCL a few years ago. And I just remember it went right to the first thing through my head was I thought about all those other players that I'd seen, you know, just having to come out and stretch and put on the brace. And then I had the brace on for a year under my gear. And man,
it's tough, right?
Those knees. Yeah, it's heartbreaking. But OK, well, I just want to thank you guys both. And you've got a couple more years coming up. How's the season going this year, Nick?
It's going all right. I think knock out a couple bounces, and I think the second half's gonna be a good stretch for us. But I think we're like 500 right now, so we're doing all right.
Yeah, that's good. You guys are in a tough conference.
Yeah,
and when you play the number one, number two, and like number three,
yeah, it's hard to
rank teams in a row. It's kind of
But we have a good team. I think we're going around here.
Yeah, we occasionally get to watch some of those games. Occasionally they're on TV here, and it's always fun to watch. And I don't know. I just want to wish you the best luck, and hopefully that, you know, as your career continues, you get those bounces that you're looking for, and love to see you on that Hobie Baker list again.
Oh, yeah.
Bounce right down to L.A. afterwards.
yeah. Cool. You might as well just follow the
Utah guys.
Utah to Colorado. You might as well go Colorado to freaking NHL. Go play for the Kings like everybody else.
Yeah. Super easy.
All right. Well... Yeah, super easy.
Write your goals.
Stretch.
Do you have that written down? I'm going to play for the LA Kings, and I'm going to stretch. I'm going to write that goal. I need to start stretching more. All right, Alex and Nick, I want to thank you guys so much for coming on the show. It's important for us to hear these stories and hear how you guys, you know, made it in hockey, and it's important for us to celebrate you guys and just take a minute to thank you guys and tell you that we appreciate what you've done and helping Utah hockey and putting us on the map a little bit more. And Alex, it's amazing. I can't believe you're already done with your commitment. An awesome degree. Thanks. I mean, hockey got you an amazing degree.
It did. I'm very thankful for that.
So. And Nick, what's your major?
Economics. Yeah.
Are you going to be an accountant?
I don't know. Hopefully a hockey player.
A hockey player that knows how to spend your money and save your money. That's smart.
Exactly.
We need some of those, too. All right, well, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's an amazing story, and thank you for telling it with us. And coming up next, on the next episode of the Utah Puck Report, we are going to have Mason Manick, who gave up the opportunity to play NCAA hockey and accepted that spot in the WHL. So I'm going to pick his brain about that because I was all over his dad. Don't go dub. I'm super proud of the kid, but I wanted to see him play college hockey too. So if you haven't subscribed already, make sure you subscribe. We've got the KSL Sports app. Just download that, and you can, you know, follow all the sports, the Utah Jazz, everything that KSL covers. And you can also find our podcast right there. You can text the word PUCK to 57500, and that will get you subscribed as well. And that's it. Nick, Alex, thanks again for coming, and we'll see you next week on the Utah Puck Report.
All right. Thank you, Jay.
Yeah, thanks, Jay.